This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Glass became a popular medium for American artists in the 1960s. That's because some new technology made it possible to work with glass in small spaces. And one school in Western North Carolina was an early adopter of the new techniques. Now the Pendleton School of Crafts is hosting an exhibition dedicated to its efforts to expand glass art. The exhibit, Alchemy, features 12 artists who are pushing the medium in new directions. Robin Dreyer is the communications manager of Pendleton. He joins us now from Blue Ridge Public Radio. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having us.
What a pleasure. We're going to talk to one of the artists in just a minute, but tell us about glass becoming so widely available and kind of an important medium in art in the 60s. What happened?
Sure. Well, it all centers around a guy named Harvey Littleton. And at flashing forward, Harvey, after he quit teaching, retired to Spruce Pine, which is right near Pendleton, and lived and worked there for the last 30 or so years of his life. But he was a Cranbrook graduate in ceramics, and he was teaching ceramics at University of Wisconsin in Madison. But his father had worked for the Corning Company in New York, and he had seen glass as he was growing up. And he had early on had an interest in the potential of it as an art material. But at that time, glass was really the province of glass factories and large group workshops. And it just wasn't deemed to be practical for a few people to do at a studio scale. So he was teaching ceramics in Wisconsin. But somewhere in the early 60s, he visited Murano, which is this island near Venice, which is the center of Italian glass art. And he saw the techniques they were using and just kind of watched and asked some questions and also bought some tools and brought them back. Then he connected with a chemist named Dominique Labino, and they together developed this studio-scaled glass melting furnace. They demonstrated this at the Toledo Art Museum in 1962, and that demonstration is considered to be the very beginning of the studio art glass movement in this country.
When you say art glass art, you know, what comes to mind for me is glass blowing, right? I mean, which seems to me a very low-tech kind of a thing. So tell me, first of all, if I'm wrong about that, was there other form of glass art or art making using glass? And then why did it require so much space? If I'm seeing this little guy with a little flute and he's making this big bubble with his glass, but it's more than that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there's a lot more that goes into it. And there are other ways of working glass besides glass blowing, although glass blowing is what most people have seen. And I might later on mention an array of stuff that we teach at Pendleton. But I think the issue was just that the materials were industrial materials, and the melting and mixing of the glass had always been done on an industrial scale. And nobody had really worked out, you know, how would you do this if you were one or two people working in a small shop?
That gets worked out in 62. It gets exhibited in Toledo, but the Pendleton School picks up on it pretty quickly, right?
Yeah, so what happened was the director of Pendleton at the time was a guy named Bill Brown. He was the Pendleton's second director. He took over after our founder. And he had actually worked one summer as a designer for Steuben Glass. And so he had seen glass blowers working in the Steuben factory and had a little bit of familiarity and was also thinking about the potential of it as an art material. So in 65, just a couple years later, or in 64, excuse me, he saw Harvey Littleton demonstrate his studio scale glass furnace at a World Crafts Council meeting. And he said the minute he saw that furnace, he knew Pendleton was in. This was going to happen at Pendleton. So he asked Harvey if he would come build glass equipment at Pendleton. He was not available. So he sent a student of his named Bill Boyson. So this was in 65 now, and Pendleton built a 10 by 20 foot shed and ran a gas line to it. It was made out of homasote, a very cheap building material. And Bill Brown said that when Boyson arrived, he gave him $150 and a license to steal, meaning from the other studios at Pendleton.
See.
And So Boysen gathered up what he needed, built some basic glass blowing equipment, and a week later they were blowing glass at Penland.
And did it catch on? I mean, how big? I mean, obviously the technology comes along okay, but it also becomes a phenomenon. Artists are really becoming pretty interested pretty quickly, right?
Right. So after that first demonstration of that furnace, people scattered all over the country began trying to figure this out and learning from each other. And so then again, Penland added glass to its regular workshop program right away the next year and started bringing in various people from around the country who were learning glass. Although I found this great quote from Fritz Dreisbach, who was also one of the early Penland glass people, who said that in the 60s, they used to joke that the teachers were glass blowers who had a few more hours of experience than the students. But anyway, in 1971, again at Penland, that same guy, Fritz Dreisbach, and Mark Peiser, who was the first resident artist in glass at Penland, and we'll talk a little more about him later, and Henry Halem, another glass blower, they got together at Penland and started the Glass Arts Society. And initially, that just meant that they got about 50 people from around the country who were working with glass to come to Penland and blow glass and watch each other and share what they were doing. They had another meeting at Penland in 72, and then it became a full-fledged, kind of affinity organization that is now an international organization of both artists and collectors, and is still going. They just had their conference in Murano in Italy, which is the center of Italian glass.
So tell us about this exhibit now. It's called Alchemy, right? And what's the purpose of this exhibit?
Well, what we've done. So I should just back up one notch and say that. There's a whole lot of glass exhibitions and other glass activities going on in Western North Carolina this summer, started by the Biltmore House bringing a large exhibition of work by Dale Chihuly, who's quite a well-known artist. And that inspired glass artists in this area to organize a little bit and put together a lot of other things in glass, because there are so many glass artists in this part of the state. So Penland's contribution to that is that we've put together this beautiful exhibition, which is work by a number of people who are really pushing the medium in new ways. They're working with different ways of formulating the glass, different ways of forming it, different ways of working with it after it's cold, and just a whole range of really exciting techniques. A lot of which are based on earlier, more classical techniques, but which this group of people we feel are really pushing things in new directions.
One of those artists.
Hence the title Alchemy.
Hence the title Alchemy. And one of those artists is Dean Allison, who's a resident artist at the Penland School of Crafts, works primarily in glass, and his artwork is on display as part of that Alchemy exhibition. Dean, welcome.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me. That was so well said, Robin.
Oh, thanks.
Tell us about how you got started working in glass.
I took an elective. I was a figurative painter in college, and I took an elective in glass with a guy named Jack Wax. I wasn't interested in sculpture at all at the time, and fell in love with the material. It's very industrial trade-like material. My dad's an electrician, retired electrician, so I kind of liked that idea of craft, trade, art all coming together. And when I graduated, the teacher at the time, Jack Wax, had told me not to move to Seattle, which I wanted to do, that I should come to the Penland School of Crafts, which I had a friend that was coming down here, and stake something here. So yeah. I worked for a lot of the resident artists from the school, volunteered at the school, fell in love with the place.
You do some fascinating stuff. You've got glass portraits, essentially busts in glass, right, that you do. So these are fully formed, three-dimensional, busts. Tell us how this process works.
Well, it's, I basically take a mold, a Halloween mask off of a person. Choose a model, take a mask off of someone, using like a silicone rubber. It's a special effects material that's made for motion picture industry. And with that mask, I pour wax into it, and then that wax you know, enables me to sculpt it, manipulate it into whatever gesture or however that's going to look. I then take a mold off that, an investment mold, which is basically plaster silica based. Steam that wax out. It's essentially a lost wax process, kind of almost like a bronze process. Mm-hmm. And then fill the mold with glass. So, you know, in whatever manner that is.
It's a tricky process because of the dynamics of sort of heating and cooling glass. You have to really babysit this stuff, huh?
Right. Glass is a stressed out material. It can be very stressed out material. So you have to go through a couple different zones to let it cool down in a stress-free manner.
Dean, how long does it take for one of those busts to come to room temperature?
Anywhere from 3 weeks to a month and a half.
Wow. So you just can't stick it in the icebox and say, I got to show this tomorrow. I'm going to stick it in the freezer.
No, you can't. I mean, you work on a lot of different projects at one time and, you know, put them to sleep and hope something comes out.
Why glass? So. What is it about glass? I mean, you talked about the sort of the industrial nature of it. In other words, the process is very attractive to you. What about the product, glass? Do you get something from glass that you find, obviously it's going to be different than any other medium, but what is it for you that's so attractive with the product?
Well, you know, Mark Pizer, who's my hero, has a lot of really awesome quotes that I won't be able to think of right now. But
okay. We'll put those on the website. By the way, just to interrupt your train of thought while you're trying to remember these quotes, we've got obviously pictures of these, some of the exhibit pieces at our website, stateofthings.org, so you can take a look at what we're talking about. Okay, so you were telling me about the art itself.
So basically, you know, glass to me is very characteristic of the human condition. It's fragile, it's opaque, it's transparent, it's, you know, colorful, it's painterly. It can be broken. It can be stressed out. It can be so many things that, to me, is the best medium to mimic human.
And when you do mimic humans, you've got a series that you use with figures whose eyes are closed. Tell us about those.
Well, you know, I could open the eyes. I could do that. That would be very Romanesque. It would be caricature-esque. I like to think of my work as more of a document. It's a three-dimensional snap. Francis Bacon, who's one of my favorite artists, and he's a painter, said that, you know, what he did was a snapshot of time. So it's a recording, I think, what I do is a recording of someone, of an instance in a way. So the eyes being closed is more of a barrier to be able to interrogate and to make preconceptions, judgments that the model that I'm using is unaware of. And so, you know, we're allowed to have that confrontation.
Without being judged ourselves as we make our many, many judgments. Interesting.
Right. And
go ahead.
Well, and you know, basically kind of make us realize that we're really, aside from physicality, we're all very similar.
And unlike other artists, you keep the snapshot where the eyes are closed. So I think that's cool, too. That's a great thing. Robin, tell us about some of the other glass art that's going to be on display in Alchemy.
Well, we have both mentioned Mark Pizer, and he came to Penland in 67 as the first resident artist in glass.
My all-time hero.
And he's Dean's hero. And he settled in the area and has this beautiful house and glass studio just a couple miles from the school. He has an interesting background. He studied as an engineer before he got involved in art, and he's also a classical musician, but he's got a very scientific bent, and he's done incredible work developing new formulations for glass that, in particular, in recent years, he's been working with glass that refract light in very specific and interesting ways. So he's been making these cast glass pieces where he has a great sense of form, so the forms themselves are very beautiful, but then he develops the forms so that the glass is a varying thickness in different parts of the form, and because of the way he's formulated the glass, as the glass changes in thickness, it refracts the light differently. So he builds these pieces, which if you just shine light on them, are kind of milky in color, but when light passes through them, they acquire these colors in kind of a range from orange to blue, and appear to just have this incredible coloration that's been built into them. But that color is not actually in the glass. It's coming from this variable refraction. It's quite magical.
Wow.
And he's also a very good sculptor. So, there, you know, in addition to that property, there's just beautiful, beautiful forms. And then kind of on a very different end of the spectrum, we have one large wall piece by an artist named Amber Cowan. And she's a flame worker, so she's working with glass over a torch rather than in its molten state. So she's putting the glass on tools, holding it in front of a flame, and using that to heat it up and manipulate it. But she's been doing this beautiful work where she's starting with industrial waste glass. So she's getting glass that's all the offcuts and the broken pieces from glass factories, so there's color built in already. And then without adding any more color, she's making these beautiful assembled sort of floral displays that go on the wall that are made from this this waste industrial glass. Another piece that people will see as soon as they walk into the gallery, which I know people will be fascinated by, is by an artist named Tim Tate, who's making these large wall pieces, and he puts these flat cast elements behind a piece of glass, and then there's this clever kind of arrangement of one-way mirrors and LED lights that creates an effect sort of like almost like you'd see in a funhouse, where it creates a series of reflections, and there appears to be receding into kind of infinite space with repetitions of his imagery.
It's fascinating stuff. We're going to have to go to our website and then finally to the exhibit up in the mountains. Go see the exhibit. Robin Dreyer, Communications Manager for the Penland School of Crafts. Dean Allison, a resident artist at the Penland School of Crafts who works primarily in glass. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thanks so much. And the show's up till September 16th.
That's right.
Lots of great work in it.
Alchemy on display at the Penland Gallery and Visitors Center until September 16th. We've got all the information at our website, stateofthings.org. It is a program produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley's our technical director. Al Wadarski's filling in today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.